Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Dassey Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
We miss Eileen Dunne already. We love Shane McGowan, but we miss Eileen Dunne. Retired on Friday. Slipped away without a word. And maybe we'll get a chance to talk to her before the end of the week. Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. How are you? 51551RayRTE.ie. How was the weekend? Yeah. Good weekend. Great. We watched Disenchanted and were disenchanted with Disenchanted because it wasn't as good as Enchanted. That's the thing with sequels. They're rarely as good. They're rarely as good as the original. And we watched Spirited as well. It was a weekend of Christmas movies. That's with Ryan Reynolds and Will Ferrell. We were sort of slightly enchanted by Spirited, but Disenchanted with Disenchanted. So it's happened. We'll get to that in a moment. The World Cup started yesterday. We'll talk about that in a moment. But you might have been listening to Morning Ireland this morning, or you might have read it in the paper. More than half of nine-year-olds now own a phone, and they play and read less. So oftentimes when we be talking about mobile phones and the fact that it's a computer in your hand and the fact that more and more young people have them, we would say it's not just about the fact that they're on screens, it's about what they're not doing when they're on screens. And now we have the research to prove what they're not doing is reading, taking part in sports, doing cultural activities such as music or dance. They're all down, down, down. And this survey was between 2007 or 2008 and 2018. So it doesn't even include the COVID years, when I would imagine that mobile phone ownership of nine-year-olds went through the roof. So that 54% in this research of nine-year-olds own mobile phones, that's probably gone over 60%, I would imagine. And it is worrying. It is worrying. And what do you do? I don't know what you do. I don't know what the answer is, because, you know, there's a lot of peer pressure, and then there's pester pressure. So, you know, peer pressure in the schoolyard, and then they go home and they pester and they pester and they pester. And what do parents do but succumb to the pester? And that is a problem. So where is the answer? Is it in, you know, some sort of legislation? Can you legislate for something like that? Could you say that, you know, we can do it for smoking, we can do it for drinking, driving, voting, all of those things? Could we introduce legislation around the ownership of mobile phones? Is that what we need? I don't know. Because it's eating into the good stuff. It's eating into the reading and the physical activity and the cultural activity. And that's not good. And the parents who want to keep their children mobile phone free until they hit first year, it's very difficult for them if 54%... of nine-year-olds have it, and their nine-year-old or 10-year-old's coming home going, well, they all have it, mammy. I've been left out. Why can't I have one? Pester, pester, pester for Christmas, for communion, for confirmation, whatever. Anyway, a few years ago, we spoke to a principal of a primary school in Blennerville. Terry was his name. And at the time, they had sorted something out, can't remember the exact details, with the parents about mobile phones, and they all were in it together, the school and the parents, and it seemed to work. Anyway, we're going to get him back on. And if you've any ideas of what can be done, or if you have a personal experience with not giving the mobile phone to a child until they're 13 or 14 or 12 or first year, whatever, do let us know. 51551, ray@rte.ie. 6-1 is the score. England beat Iran in their opening game of the World Cup. And I was very disappointed to see that the plan by Harry Kane and other captains to wear the One Love armband as a show of their solidarity with the LGBT plus community in Qatar, they, at the last minute, they decided not to do it because they were told if they did, they'd get a yellow card. Seemingly, all the various national organisations, England, Wales, Belgium, Holland, Germany, Switzerland, Denmark, they were willing to take a financial sanction. But when it came to getting a yellow card, they said they can't do it. So their plan to wear the rainbow armband was scuppered. I see that Alex Scott, who's a presenter who's covering the World Cup for the BBC, she wore a One Love armband, which is good. It's a bit of a mess. Actually, it's more than a bit of a mess. It's a total mess. And I don't know, like, even... Gary Lineker came on last night. I don't know if you saw it, but in effect, he apologised for the whole thing before they started the coverage of it. He outlined the human rights abuses, the number of people who've been, you know, died in the making of the billion-dollar euro stadiums, and all of that. And so I don't know what the answer there is either. There's a lot of questions today, but no answers. Joe Lycett thought he had the answer there. He sort of was addressing David Beckham and saying, David, will you please stop promoting the Qatar World Cup? And if you don't, I'm going to shred £10,000 of my own money just to prove how serious I am about that. Now, I thought that was a bit ridiculous because, you know, that's a waste of money. Give it to a charity. Anyway, it was an empty threat. And Joe Lycett, if you don't know, is a broadcaster, comedian. He's gay, and he was doing this, again, to show solidarity with the LGBTQ plus community in Qatar. And earlier on today, he put up this video explaining what had happened. Where are you, Joe? Where's Joe gone? Disappeared. He's gone from my thing. I had him there, but he's gone. Will you see if you can find him? Joe Lycett there. If you can find him, play him. If not, we'll come back to him. He was there earlier on. Bono is playing tonight in the Olympia Theatre, one of the smallest venues he's played in a long time, I suppose. But he's doing the world tour for Surrender, 40 songs, one story. And that's a hot ticket, isn't it? If you're there tonight, the homecoming of sorts, him, very intimate setting. He'll be reading from the book and singing, and himself is going to be there. Uachtaráin na hÉireann, Michael D. Higgins, he is going to be there, which is great. What else is going on in the world? We got an email in over on various things. We'll get to a couple of them. Peter from Galway was on. Dear Ray and team, hope all's well. Totally random request for you, so here it is. Earlier this week, my sister Anne and I were talking about an old ad from our childhood for McVitie's Hobnobs that had a particular jingle that went something like this: bake them at 250 degrees and pray they come out gold upon your hobbledy nobbledy knees. The ad itself was something along the lines of a mother in the kitchen trying and failing to make the biscuits and the son eating a packet of Hobnobs in the living room. It was sometime around the 80s, late 80s or early 90s. We would love to know what were the full lyrics of the jingle. I've been searching high and low on YouTube for it, but no joy. Perhaps you or your listeners might be able to help. It would be a great laugh for myself and my sister. We used to do this thing all the time, Peter. And then Google came along and everyone could do it for themselves. But you've tried and you failed. But we have people, you know, on our team who are very good at researching. That's their job. Very good at researching. So we went after it and we found the full ad. Now, the quality, the sound quality isn't great. So I don't know if you'd be able to make this out. But it was from the late
1993.
The late nothings. It was 1993. The early 90s. So it wasn't the late 80s. It was the early 90s. And this is the full ad, if you can make anything of it. Peter from Galway, this is for you. That's not it. Joe Lycett threw me there. This is it.
Have you ever tried to make a hobbly nobbly bite? Unless you've got the knack, the home-baked taste you'll like. If you take all the hobbly nobbly bits, stir all the hobbly nobbly bits, bake them all at 220 degrees, and pray they turn out golden on your hobbly nobbly knees. When you can't get the nobbly home-baked taste, and you're left with icky bickies, give the whole lot the hobbly nobbly boot, and serve some hobbly nobbly biscuits from McVitie's.
McVitie's Hobnobs. If you can't beat them.
I played it in its entirety because I know Peter will listen back and he'll transcribe that for his sister and they'll have a great laugh. You don't know what's going to entertain people. And the little bit they wanted in particular was this bit.
Bake them all at 220 degrees and pray they turn out golden on your hobbly nobbly knees.
That's that bit there and then it goes on after that. So enjoy that, Peter and sister, the Hobnobs ad from way back. News just in from Lotto headquarters. A syndicate of 47 is celebrating their Lotto win of 1 million euro. And they're all part of a retirement group called Young at Heart from County Mayo. And Frank Moran is one of the lucky winners and he joins us on the line. How are you doing, Frank?
Hello, Ray. It's nice to hear from you.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Whereabouts in Mayo are you from?
We're from a place called Park Turla. It's about 7 miles north of Castlebar.
Aha, right.
It's just a small village.
Right. How do you say it again?
Park, P-A-R-K-E.
Oh, right. Park, right. Very good. I've never heard of it. Is it on the sea or inland or where is it?
Oh, no, it's very much inland.
Very much inland. Right, yeah. Okay. So you're up celebrating your win.
We're up celebrating our win, that's right. Yeah. We came up by 3 this morning.
Great.
A very, very packed carriage on the Mayo train that left Castlebar at 10 o'clock and we nearly had a full carriage
great.
To ourselves.
Brilliant. How long have you been doing the syndicate for the lotto?
We've been doing it since 2015.
Right, okay, 7 years.
A chap called Michael Cosgrave started it off. He's one of our members.
Yeah. And Michael is the bagman, is he?
Oh, Michael is the bagman, yeah, very definitely, yeah.
So he makes sure that everybody pays up?
He makes sure that everybody pays up.
Yeah.
And there's a great tale within a tale there.
Go on.
He had special sheets run out. He does the same numbers every week and every year.
Yeah.
But on the day that we won, he had to go to Dublin, and because we had a couple of new members join during recent months.
Mm.
He had a fiver left over, and he said to one of our other members who was in the shop, stick that on the Daily Millions. And the Daily Millions came up.
Isn't that brilliant?
Isn't that unbelievable, right?
That is unbelievable. Yeah.
And
how did you find out who had the winning? You know, when did you? What was? Have you got a WhatsApp group, or were we all in the same room?
We had a WhatsApp group, and I picked up my phone at 11:15 on the I think it was a Thursday evening.
Yeah.
And Thursday night, and. I see this message had come in, Michael Cosgrave, we've all won 21,000 to 100 and something.
Yeah.
And I called the wife straight away. I said, look at this. And I was going to ring my best friend, who was also in the syndicate, and I said, I better hold off on this. This could be a scam.
A scam, yes, yeah.
Because so many things going around now, and I get apps from AIB and different things, and they're not genuine. And I held off, but then the next morning I realised that it was genuine because some more of the group had come in and confirmed it.
What a brilliant thing! And you gave the figure there. I did it on my phone there. 1 million divided by 47 is 21,276.60.
Yeah.
Tax free.
Tax free, yeah. Well, it's going to come in very handy anyhow.
Yeah. And your wife's still alive, obviously, which is great. And you're retired. How long are you retired, Frank?
I'm retired. I was a founder member of the club back in 2007 and 2008. We joined the Actors Retirement Ireland in 2008.
Right.
But we had a little club prior to that.
Uh-huh.
And I'm really over the moon. I drive an old car, so I can replace that now.
Have you had your eye on any car in particular?
No.
Now you can shop around at your leisure.
Yeah, great.
So there'll be a train journey back down, and with the checks for 21,276.60 in the back of your pocket.
Well, I think they come a bit later. I think the million has been deposited in the Bank of Ireland by now, as we speak.
And
I think the final division is going to be done.
Right.
Maybe next week at the club, I don't know, but I haven't heard anything about that yet. But I'm looking forward to it.
And as you know, Frank, in a world with a lot of bad news, it's great to get a good news story like this. So, enjoy the winnings and the day and the train journey home. And thanks for taking time out from the party to talk to us. Frank Moran. Thanks, Frank.
Thank you, Ray. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
See you. Bye. That's the Bluebells, Young at Heart. And there's a lovely video of the Young at Heart group from Mayo receiving their cheque at Lotto headquarters today. It's up there on our page. Parents with these big cars parking on corners, obviously no regard for rules of the road to get these little kids to their sports activities. Why can't they walk or cycle and get the exercise? Lead by example, says Jane. Related, but sort of. And then Sinead says, I've never had a problem with the phone issue. I informed my children they would not get a phone till Christmas after they started in first year. Despite the fact that 95% of their friends had gotten phones before finishing primary school, they knew our minds would not be changed, so they never argued and never felt alienated or left out because they didn't have a phone, says Sinead. And one of the team mentioned today that the group of parents of the class, her 10-year-old daughter, have for the last couple of years signed a pact at the beginning of the term that they would not get their children mobile phones while they're in primary school. It's been a huge success, with most agreeing to it. It's a majority approach. It's been easier not to bow down to peer pressure and individual children feeling left out because they're the exception of not owning one. So the majority of them have signed up to this WhatsApp pact and not got their children mobile phones. The idea behind the pact was that mobile phone usage amongst children is just a house of cards that can fall around you very easily. And the repercussions of having internet access and text messages in your pocket could be that children fall away from their childhood earlier and earlier, and you don't want that. And what she says is that the worry about what comes with children having a phone has just simply been removed for the parents in that particular group. It worked for them, may not work for everybody. Now, I better tell you about our quiz. Here you go. We're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and answer three questions each on bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And we have a prize. It's a two-night stay for two people in Dublin's Hard Rock Hotel with a bottle of bubbly waiting on arrival. The perfect way to relax after a fun-filled day in the city. They want you to take advantage of the January sale, spend those fabulous Christmas vouchers or just soak up all the capital has to offer with the Hard Rock Hotel Dublin's brand new Material Girl package. Watch your favourite movies on the in-room entertainment system or get up close and personal with the stars while touring the hotel's huge music memorabilia collection. And they've loads of stuff from Bowie, Beyonce, and that's just the two B's we haven't even got to see. Your stay at the Hard Rock Hotel in Dublin also includes the iconic Sound of Your Stay programme. And you know this before, you can borrow a guitar and bring it up to your room. Anyway, more details, hardrockhotel.com, hardrockhotel.com. And we're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our Reel in the Ears quiz. And today's qualifying question is this. Who did Ireland beat in the rugby on Saturday night in the Aviva Stadium? Who did Ireland beat in the rugby on Saturday night in the Aviva Stadium? 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925. And good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, the latest Growing Up in Ireland study from the ESRI shows that there is a significant increase in the proportion of 9-year-olds with their own mobile phone. It has jumped in 10 years from 44% to 54%. And owning a mobile phone is also associated with less time reading, less time involved in physical activity and lower levels of involvement in cultural activities, according to the ESRI. And this reminded us of Blennerville National School in County Kerry, which banned the use of mobile phones with the full support of parents for nearly 3 months around 4 years ago. Back then, we spoke to Terry O'Sullivan, who was the principal of the school at the time. He's on secondment now as director of the Tralee Education Support Centre, and he's on the line. Hello, Terry.
Good afternoon, Ray. How are you doing?
Good. We thought of you immediately when we heard these results today. So, director of the Tralee Education Support Centre, is that a promotion or, of sorts, yeah?
So, I suppose, Ray, I'm just organising continuing professional development courses for teachers.
Aha, right, okay. So this 9-year-old thing, and I'm just remind people as well that this is from 2008 to 2018, so COVID isn't included this, which will probably skew the figures even upwards. So remind us about what happened in Blennerville National School then 4 years ago.
Perfect. So I suppose, Ray, back 4 years ago, we introduced a 12-week no phone or access to any social media app via any device freeze with sixth class in consultation with their parents. And why we did this, I suppose mobile phone communication between pupils at home in the evenings and late at night had severely damaged friendships and relationships in the class. And it was making it extremely difficult for the teacher to teach the class.
Right.
So as a result of this, we called a mandatory meeting with the parents, board of management and full school staff to explain to the parents the negative impact these communications were having in class and how they were, seriously impacting the teaching and learning.
So just go into detail there on how they're affecting the teaching and the atmosphere in classes.
Well, I suppose the overall atmosphere, the teacher used to come to me continually and couldn't put her finger on it, what was actually happening. And I suppose there was nothing actually happening in class physically, but I suppose there was just this aura or atmosphere within the class. And it was happening at night at home with messages being sent. And then there was this tension within the class during the day. And friendships really strained because of it, and just an overall negative atmosphere within the class.
Yeah, because I suppose, and this happens not just in Blenheim, but all over the place, there's exclusion, you know, where a little clique is formed, that, you know, it follows on then that somebody are going to be excluded from that clique.
Yes, and it's 100%.
So there's WhatsApp groups going here, there and everywhere, and people feel left out, and that's not good. Yeah. And then you were saying as well to Kieran that pupils were coming in more tired in the morning.
And concentration levels were severely down as well. And it was having a negative impact on the learning, without a doubt.
And then, of course, you realised that unless everybody was on board, it was impossible to get anything done.
Yeah, 100%. And I suppose the key component of this, pilot, was the consultation with the parents. Mm. And I suppose several parents spoke of the pressure that they were under to provide their children with phones because everybody else they assumed had phones in the class. So there was an eagerness from the parents to do something and to work with the school. And I suppose, look, a collective decision, it wasn't the school imposing a ban. I suppose it was a consultation process where a collective decision was made on the night. And I suppose that collective decision on the night that was made, and there was some excellent inputs from parents on the night. And the decision was that the parents would go home and remove the phones and access to the social media apps for the remainder of the school year. So this happened kind of the start of April. So for the 12-week period till the end of the year, they had no access to the WhatsApps, the TikToks, the Snapchats. Mm.
How did you find their behaviour changed, Terry?
There was a marked improvement, I suppose, Ray, in relationships and friendships within the class, nearly immediately, to be honest. The teacher reported a huge improvement in concentration, and look, as a result, I suppose, obviously, a massive contentment within the class that wasn't there prior to it. And it was just a pity that it wasn't, I suppose, videoed before and videoed after. Now, I know you can't do that, but I suppose it was, you know, huge. Really huge. I suppose what really hit it home for me was the day of their school tour. Normally, children were allowed to take the phone on the school tours as a treat. They weren't on this occasion. And I remember the bus driver getting off the bus saying to me, he said, "It's been a while since I've been on a school tour, and there was so much talking and laughing and singing. It brought him back to years gone when there was no phones and they weren't looking down into the screen and into the phone."
And that's joyous for you, but sad that he remarked that there was such a difference.
And he wasn't aware of what was actually going on. You know, it was just a throwaway comment, but it really hit it home to me that the impact that it actually was having.
One of the things that I said at the top of the show and people remark on, it's not just the screen time, it's what they're not doing when they're on the screen. And from this research, we now know they're reading less, they're less physically active, they're less likely to learn a musical instrument or to other cultural activities like dancing. And I suppose as a teacher, the reading less is worrying for you.
Definitely, of course, Ray. I mean, reading is the foundation for everything in the curriculum. And I suppose, look, once you give a child a phone, and I suppose looking at the Kieran brought my attention staff report today, 9 years old is a really, really young age. I have a daughter myself in first class and she's 7. And I couldn't fathom in 2 years' time giving a mobile phone because of that situation. Like, they do become over-reliant on it, and looking with the different social media apps and the different games and things on it, and that obviously eats into other time. So, and it, as a parent, it's really difficult. Once you hand over that phone, it's really difficult, to supervise it.
It's also very difficult as a parent to withstand the pester power, you know, the pressure.
100%,
And you don't want your child to be the odd one out in school.
One.
Yes.
Yeah, 100%. And that was the key message that was hammered home at that meeting that night. And I totally feel for parents. I'm a parent myself, and that day is coming soon for me as well, where you have to, and I suppose, look, as a parent, you have to say no. It's a real pressure, but I suppose you have to have that relationship with your child to explain to your child while you're doing this. But there is no doubt, I suppose, there may be a place for something like we did in Blenheim in other schools. Now, I know loads about the schools across the country. Rang at the time and emailed in relation to how we went about the programme, but I suppose maybe conversations need to take place between parents and schools, you know. And I suppose, don't get me wrong, I was a principal of the school for 7 years. Schools are extremely busy places. Principals are extremely busy people, and they can't solve all the problems in society.
But from the stats here, more parents than not are succumbing to the pressure, because it's over half.
Yeah.
It's over half.
Yes.
I know this sounds draconian and drastic, but, you know, you can't drive until you're 17 or whatever age it is, 80. You can't vote, you can't drink until a certain age. There's legislation around that. You know, is it time that we introduce some sort of legislation around mobile phones?
Yeah, well, I think it definitely is. I think it's definitely unlegislated for, and it's time that we take a look at it and not just put the pressure on the school to deal with it. Maybe it's time for government to take a look at it and say, well, look, there's a certain age where you can own a mobile phone, and that, and maybe that sounds draconian, but look, I suppose it can be a seriously damaging tool if used wrong. I mean, the potential for I suppose, things to go wrong when giving a child a phone. It's not a phone, I suppose. We use the word phone. You're giving a child direct access to the internet.
Yeah.
And we know the internet is a very, very dangerous place if left unsupervised.
And that is an aspect. But what is interesting about this report is that we now have statistics around what they're not doing while they're on their screens. You know, as well as all that other stuff, the danger involved in strangers accessing their information and all that. That's one side. But the other side is that it's taking up valuable time when they should be reading, physically active, you know, involved in other stuff, all the good stuff. And being a child, being a
That's a key one, Ray, and that comment was actually passed during the time. Let children be children, and let children. You know, technology is fantastic, but like, let children. There's a certain time in life when children should be left children, and there's a time, like when it's time to drive a car, when it's time to do certain things.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there should be an age limit on when a child should have owned their own mobile phone.
Yeah, I suppose the genie's out of the bottle, or it's going to be very difficult to put it back in. My son and daughter didn't get their phones until the end of first year. However, when my youngest went into first year, the teachers used the phone to play games at the end of class, like Kahoot.
Yes.
So we had to get one well ahead of our planned time. You see, there you go.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And they are, and as I said, look, they're a part of the classroom in a lot of post-primary schools now, and they can be used. I've seen how effectively they can be used to enhance teaching and learning. But I suppose that's been used in a supervised manner. It's then when they go home in the evenings and they have these phones. So I suppose, look, parents have a role definitely to play as well to how they actually allow these phones to be used at home in the evening. A key one for us is not allowing children to bring that phone into the bedroom at night, you know? That's a critical one.
Yeah. Okay, sure. I'm sure we'll talk again, Terry. Thanks so much for taking our call today.
Perfect, Ray. Thanks a million.
That's Terry O'Sullivan there. And Terry was the former principal of Blennerville National School, and they introduced a ban for 3 months four years ago for their sixth class on mobile phones. 51551, Ray at RTE.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551, The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, back in the difficult days of lockdown 2020, we spoke to Dubliner James McGill from his hospital bed in Beaumont. It was a very powerful interview at the time. James' life had changed dramatically after a diagnosis of lymphoma. In fact, he nearly died. He spent almost 300 days in hospital. He lost his mobility, and James is back in. We spoke to you again, James, didn't we, when you got home?
Yeah, well, yeah. I suppose you
got home for Christmas. Yeah.
That's the goal.
Good to see you in the flesh.
Great to see you in the flesh. Feels like a weird Tinder date that's kind of gone back and forth, but we finally connected.
We finally met you. You're a wheelchair user now.
I am.
And there was a time when, I mentioned it there, and you can talk about it, that it wasn't looking good at all for you.
No, I mean, there was definitely points where it was end game. I think we spoke about it before. My weight was at like 32 kilos, I believe. And people waiting for phone calls. Then I just being like ignorant and did a 180 and just kind of messed with their heads a little bit more and just wasn't getting enough attention.
Yeah. And there was something in the brain.
Yes. I had CNS lymphoma on the right side, which affected mobility on the left. And then there was one on the frontal lobe, which could have affected my cognitive skills and speech and memory and stuff. And fortunately, or unfortunately, depending on who you ask, that's all good.
So your personality hasn't changed?
No, I can't blame the limb injury on that one. Yeah.
Although you may, in the future,
I may try and pull it out of the bag at times.
You've asked doctors this, but how did it happen? Where did it come from? Were you just unlucky, or?
I think it's just one of those things, right? Yeah. Anything can happen to anyone anytime. Things are going a bit too smooth. Let's sprinkle in and see if you can handle a bit of trouble.
Yeah.
And, you know.
At what age?
34.
Right. And you were you were working for Google, great job, great group of friends, great social life.
Great social life, great job, great friends, great family. Things were going pretty smooth. Yeah. Everything, I was like checking goals, I was hitting boxes, nailing it, I thought. And then, boom, things took a hard left real quick.
Yeah. I remember talking to you from your Beaumont, and you were a broken man. Yeah,
understatement.
Yeah. Yeah. So you had some dark days, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, the fluorescent lighting in that hospital didn't help, but it was definitely an interesting period of... I mean, look, I never had to do a Zoom quiz, so...
Right, you avoided that.
We avoided that one, so there is positives.
Well, you didn't lose your sense of humour. Whatever part of the brain is responsible for the sense of humour, that's not affected in any way, shape or form. Yeah, so you missed out on a lot of stuff there.
Like
having a drink on Zoom as well, there's another thing you missed out on.
What the, I mean, look, yeah. I had medication for that one.
So you were fine. So yeah, a big target of yours was to be out at home with your family last Christmas, and you hit that target.
Yeah. Yeah, thankfully, and to your listeners as well who helped with the GoFundMe page and everything, we achieved the goal. The house was changed, made like accessible. All this kind of stuff was done, and I was home, I think, your last show.
Yes, it was just before Christmas.
22nd or 23rd.
So here's the thing. So there was a build up to that, bit of excitement.
Mm.
And then I suppose come January, the realisation that I am home, but I'm a wheelchair user. My life has changed beyond recognition in the last year or so. And then getting your head around that.
Yeah, I think that's when reality kind of kicked in hard. And almost the PTSD element of it, like what actually happened. And there's a build up of, oh God, now I've got like, am I going to be stuck in this bed? What does it look like? I'm in a ceiling hoist, all these kind of things. And then conversations began with Dunleary about going out there for rehab. And I was very fortunate that they offered me a place in March, which was extremely quickly. But I just wasn't in a place to go then. I couldn't.
Why not?
I couldn't deal with the idea of being back in four walls.
Right.
And the isolation of it all again, which was quite a big part. I like being around people. I get my energy from them. So that kind of put me off.
Because you were in hospital for 300 days. And
yeah,
not good memories of that. So I suppose the thoughts of going back into that sort of environment.
And we had a few, and I think the ward manager would have called me a good negotiator.
Right.
But I didn't want to waste their time or mine. I wanted to go in fully 100% mentally committed to get out of it while I could.
And what were you being told about your mobility?
I don't expect much, really.
Right.
If you're sitting up, you'll be doing well. Don't be expecting too much. Don't love that bit. Don't like being told no.
Okay.
But like, obviously people thought maybe the place was Hogwarts and I was going to come in and be walking out of there. I'm a realist as well. So,
right. Somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. If I can get to a point where I can shower and bathroom
on your own,
on my own, that would be a goal. And that's what we set out to do. And obviously it was the left side of the body that was affected. So the focus was on the leg, which I felt more important than the arm. And we started hitting goals, I suppose, quite quickly. And we extended the stay and come up.
Talk to me a little bit about the regime, the physiotherapy regime.
Yeah, so I was on a brain injury unit in Dunleary, which obviously that's where I should have been, but was hard for me to kind of compute a little bit because cognitively, there are people there at all
levels
okay. of things, yes. whereas yes. I can converse and I can do a lot of things. That was a struggle for me sometimes to initially be like, no, talk to me like an adult. I know what day of the week it is.
Yeah.
And I was still kind of going through some bad anxiety at the time there and stuff.
You had panic attacks.
Panic attacks, severe. I'd go like from 0 to 100 real quick, catastrophizing everything. And
that's completely understandable.
Yeah. And as a control freak, which I'm not really allowed to use the word if my psychologists are listening.
why aren't you allowed to use it?
Apparently, it's got negative connotations for right. me. So I'm supposed to say agency.
Right.
But I'm a control freak.
You like agency a lot.
Yeah, I love it, Manfred. But so relinquishing control and doing all of that was quite difficult. But it was an intense physical structure of starting at the basics.
Yeah.
Looking at toddlers with jealousy and going, damn it, he can just sit up. I can't do that. Can't just walk. Where's it gone?
That must be very real. You know, looking around, people just walk past you. And if you're having a bad day, you go, that's not fair.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
You're kind of going, oh, I used to be able to do that.
Yeah.
I can't. Will I be able to do that?
How? I can't get my head. You know, I can't imagine what it's like, because progress is very slow.
Yes.
Like, how slow? Would it take weeks to see the tiniest little advance?
So I went in looking at it for small incremental changes.
Yeah.
Like any sort of gym regime or anything. You're not going to go and become beast-like in a matter of weeks.
Yeah.
It takes time. And as long as I was seeing small incremental gains, I was happy. And I have seen it. So if I'd like maybe lift my leg a little bit higher.
Right.
Or it was easier for me to lift a bit of a weight or do something like that. That for me was a win.
Okay.
Anything like that. And if I was seeing it, great. The worst thing that I could have looked at it was being impatient. And I feel that would have been the most restrictive thing, was to not be patient with it.
So there has to be acceptance.
Mm-hmm, very much so.
Yeah. And they never thought you'd be able to walk.
I don't think so.
Right.
I very much, it was not on the cards. We never looked at it. One of my neurophysios in Dunleary, I think, saw something that maybe I didn't see. And she was like, maybe.
Right.
We've got a little something there. Let's try this. You're like, I don't know, it's a bit early. And you're nervous and you're trying. And I was like, actually, I can do this.
So where are you at with that now?
Making good progress. It's, as we said, slow. And so I'm a year out of physical rehab in Dunleary, but Monday to Friday, I'm hammering it out with a PT and a neurophysio.
Right. At home?
At home. Well, I have it. I go to a gym and I go to a neurophysio, yes, practically. Right. And I'm very fortunate to be able to do that. Not everyone is in that position.
A neurophysio?
Yeah.
Right, go on.
So her specialty is the neuro, and I think we might have talked about it before, creating new pathways.
Ah, yes.
So there's still a blockage in the brain, but we're creating new pathways
Because, yeah, we probably talked about it before, neuroplasticity.
That's the word.
Brilliant book by Norman Doidge. You should read it. And it's about creating new pathways and how possible it is, because people didn't think that was possible before.
Yeah, there can be a disregard for what it's a brain, it's done, game over.
Yes, yeah.
Whereas the focus is now that can be achieved, and we are achieving it. And it's repetitive, it's tedious, but I mean, it's part of the process.
And at what stage do you go, and we were talking about acceptance, do you go, well, you know, that's it, that's as far as I can go?
I'm not there yet.
Right.
If it comes, great. I'm okay. If the wheelchair is here for the foreseeable, I'm totally cool with that. I love a seat. And that's fine. I don't like queuing either. You don't really have to do that.
Right.
But right now I'm still seeing progress. And I'm kind of, I suppose, we're beginning to walk. We're taking steps. I use it like a tripod, and I'm kind of, it's like drunk Bambi on ice.
Right.
Or somewhere outside Harcourt Street at 4 a.m. So, and I kind of looking at people going, I'm definitely better on you, I think, sometimes, you know?
Yeah, so there's progress in me, which is brilliant. And it takes a lot of drive, because you could just, you know, sit back and do nothing. So we established that before everything happened, you were going out a lot, and now you're back going out again. But now you're seeing the world from a different viewpoint.
Yeah, it's been an adjustment. Definitely interesting. As someone who did go out quite a lot and socialise a great deal, now I'm kind of coming out of going, oh, maybe I can't go there? Initially, that was my thoughts. And you see it from both sides. And obviously, I was quite ignorant to accessibility. I I hate to say that I just didn't notice it, nor did I need to. Now I do, and I'm kind of going, huh, that's not great. That's really not... Oh, I have to ring, you've got to do all these bits and pieces, and it shouldn't take an army or a week or have any sort of unlimited resources for an individual to be able to have a night out. And, yeah, I've been doing my best.
You wrote a piece for the Irish Times, and you can direct people towards that. If they put your name in, they'll find it, James McGill. And it has a quite a long list of places.
It does.
And you've been to them all. And you can rate them on accessibility, and you give the various idiosyncrasies of each place.
Yeah, so I worked with a journalist, Kira, on that piece. And we came together. She writes restaurant reviews. And I was like, look, this is great, but what is accessible? Yeah, I know you've got a word count, etc. But the Irish Times are a bit better than most of the restaurant reviews are giving it. So I do tend to go out a bit, and Kira thought we might kind of combine our efforts. And
you did. And it's a good list for people.
I hope so. I tried to make it the most, from my own personal experience. And my journey is one of a small manual wheelchair, which I understand is not for everyone. But I tried to talk about venues that I knew would be easiest for people to deal with regarding accessible bathrooms, easy doorway access, no steps.
Big question, long view.
Yeah.
What when you have the quiet moments and you're thinking about your future, what way do you see it?
Great question. I stopped doing that.
Oh, did you?
Right, I did, because I was that guy 3 years ago who had a plan and it was X, Y, and Z. That's gone. It's changed. I don't know.
So you know that life can turn on a penny.
100%. Yeah. Absolutely. I'm one bad MRI away from something changing. So let's just go with the flow.
You see. And look, the more people you talk to, it's terrible that it takes something like that for us to understand how to live our lives. But that's the way it happens.
If anything, it's been freeing in a weird way. And I've kind of gained this new, I don't want to say self-confidence, but lack of caring.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just being in your mid-30s or whatever. But
No, it comes from what you've been through.
I generally don't care anymore.
Yeah.
Initially going out, I was like, ooh, weird guy with the bleached hair is kind of rolling in to a club. Is that going to be weird? They're not looking at you. They don't care. It has been quite liberating.
They're living their own lives.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The only way you'll affect them is if you roll over their toe with one of your wheels.
That's just only sometimes by accident.
It is mad though, that because so you're liberated by that terrible
in a strange way, as there is restrictions in place, obviously, and there's certain things that I can't do as much as I want to, but overall I feel liberated.
Well, great to see you, and great to see you in such good spirits, and continue doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much.
And we'll talk to you in a year's time. It's like
hopefully,
a doctor's appointment.
Hopefully, I'll walk into the studio next year.
I'm not going to say I'll hold you to that, because
don't hold me. But let's just,
if that happens, it happens.
It happens. It happens.
Yeah, right, James McGill, great to see you. Thanks.
Great pleasure, Ray. Thank you. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet
at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Now, we read in today's papers that a violin used in the Lord of the Rings trilogy is to be auctioned next month. The owner of that violin is Irish man and musician Dermot Crehan, and he joins me now on the line from his home in London. Hello, Dermot.
Hello, how are you?
Good to talk to you. You haven't been resident in Ireland for quite some time, Dermot.
No, I left Ireland when I was 18, and that's longer ago than I'd like to.
Well, your age is listed in the paper today, so it's half a century ago.
Yes.
Half a century ago, wow. Now, this isn't any sort of violin. It's a Norwegian Hardanger.
That's right. Violin. Yeah.
Will you tell us about you were a fesh man, and you were All-Ireland fiddle champion, and you're from a musical family.
That's right.
Yeah.
We had six fiddle players in the family.
That's a noisy house.
That's a very noisy house. Yes.
that's why you moved to London, was it? So you were a sort of a gun for hire for years, and I was just looking at your CV. It's very impressive. But then a guy called Howard Shore came knocking at your door.
That's right. And around 2000, the Lord of the Rings project arrived, And I knew Howard from recording a few different films with him. I'd known him for a few years. So we were sort of good mates. He heard me playing some Irish music in the while we were sitting in a in one of our recording studios, and he sort of put two and two together when the Lord of the Rings project came along and thought, ah, Irish music, leprechauns, probably hobbits, maybe. And it took off from there.
And he didn't want you to play it on a traditional Irish fiddle. So what's the difference between that and a hardanger from Norway?
Well, it's the hardanger is the national instrument of Norway. It's similar to a violin, and each instrument is a handmade work of art.
Right.
Typical harding fila, as it's called, is beautifully decorated with mother of pearl inlay, and it also has black pen ink drawings called rosing all around the sides. Usually, it has a carved head of a maiden, or frequently an animal. And its most distinguishing feature is the four or five sympathetic strings that run underneath the fingerboard and add an echoing overtones.
So they're not played, but when you play the top four, the reverberation.
That's right. Like a sitar.
So it does sound quite different, doesn't it? Is it a bit more discordant than a violin or a fiddle?
Yes, it's not played with the same sort of eloquence.
It's mostly
for dancing, for dance music.
We have you playing from one of the Lord of the Rings scores here. We just let people hear it. It sounds like it's more than one instrument, in a way, Dermot.
Yes, it does. It's that lovely echoing effect.
Yes, yeah.
And I think Howard was absolutely sold on it. He thought it was beautiful. And he wanted that to represent the Lorien theme, which was all the way through all the three films, which was represented the good against evil.
That must be a brilliant thing, because you're the last people to add to the creative process. So you're sitting in a studio, which is Abbey Road, can't be better than that, and that's on the big screen, and you're sort of playing along to it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
What a wonderful thing to be involved in.
It is. It's a great creative process. Never enough time, of course. It's always a rush, because the music is always the very, very last thing to go on. Before a film is released, and usually can be up to days before its official release. So it's always your back is always to the wall.
But that when it works, and you know when it works, it's just amazing. The combination of a score and the right pictures just
absolutely
does something to us, doesn't it?
To the lives.
Yeah. So this is, as you described, the hardanger is a thing of beauty with all those carvings, and it's just an amazing looking thing, and it sounds brilliant as well. And you've had it under your bed for the last couple of years. And
well, I've had it under my bed since COVID.
Right. Okay. and you're stepping back from the whole thing, are you, Dermot?
I am. Yeah. I've decided now to start taking it easy and relax a little bit.
Right.
Rather than herring around the country and around Europe, playing here, there, and everywhere. So, and that's one of the reasons that I'm selling the hardanger.
Yeah.
Of course, the other thing is that these instruments have to be played, otherwise they lose that lovely shine, and you just have to play
them
all the time.
That's what they're made for. They're made to play, aren't they? Yes. Not to be left under the bed. Okay.
So
we let people know where they can bid on that if they want to. And Dermot, thanks so much for taking time out of your day to talk to us today. So it was a pleasure.
No problem.
Thanks,
Thank
Dermot.
You
thank you very much. Thank
Cheers.
You.
All the best.
Bye now. Gormagad Eileen, thank you very much. 51551radio.ie. Just some texts on 9-year-olds owning mobile phones. Bridget is in Dublin 7. She says, we are parents to a 13-year-old who has just started secondary school. I teach in a secondary public school where phones were banned on site years ago due to data protection and protection of staff as well as students. We get great work from the kids, and communication on the corridors at break time went through the roof as kids were forced to speak to each other. The Gardaí regularly briefed teaching staff on mobile phone abuse. And Ray, if you heard what we as teachers hear from these talks, you wouldn't give a kid a mobile until they're 18. Gardaí advice at least is 16. We will hold out till our daughter is 14, then see. There's no place for them in the classroom, says Bridget. And no name on this one. I once heard that giving a child a phone and the unfettered access it provides to the internet was the equivalent of leaving them alone in the middle of a city. The access to strangers, seeing inappropriate behaviour, etc. Most of us couldn't imagine leaving our 8-year-olds alone in the middle of O'Connell Street, yet we give them a phone, says that person. Now, let's get to our quiz. Here we go. Press the button. Two quizzers standing by and one prize, which is a two-night stay for two people in Dublin's Hard Rock Hotel. A bottle of bubbly waiting on arrival. Loads of things to do there. Obviously, it's in the middle of Dublin City, so you can take advantage of the January sales. You can sell your Christmas vouchers that you got over the Christmas. And they have a new Material Girl package. And it's a great place because you have all the memorabilia, Bowie, Beyonce, the Rolling Stones. You have their personalised sound of your stay program, is that it? Yes, which allows you to get vinyl, it allows you to get a Fender guitar and bring it up to your room. Amazing stuff. Hardrockhotel.com. Hardrockhotel.com. Hello, Leona.
Hi, Ray.
You're in Cork.
I am. Hi.
Are we going to sing this? Yeah. Mind you, I wouldn't be surprised if I sang everything. We saw two movies over the weekend, and both of them were singy, songy ones.
I heard. Yeah. You slated one.
Disenchanted, yeah, sorry about that. I shouldn't have. Well, I did it sort of code-wise. People mightn't understand it. Young ears mightn't understand it. But anyway, it got a 5 from our 10-year-old. So that'll tell you what it was like, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's usually very generous. What are you up to today?
Well, I'm collecting my daughter, Kaylee. We live in North Cork, so I have to drive her up and down to Cork twice a day.
Right.
For her job.
How long is that now?
Pardon?
How long does that take you?
An hour each way, right? I'm on the road for 4 hours every day.
Right.
Yeah, so, but look, sure.
That's love. That's love for you. That's love for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She owes you big time, just in taxi fares alone.
Yeah, well, she works as a pastry chef, so she feeds us desserts and yummy things.
So that explains a lot. So that's one daughter, and your other daughters do what? They're at home.
Yeah, I have Orla and Grace. Grace is doing, she's in 6th year doing her leaving cert.
Right.
And Orla is at work.
Okay. And then there's Derek. So he's a...
Yeah, Derek, he's the only man.
Yeah, how does he cope with that? He's fine with it, I suppose.
He's a bit henpecked, like, but sure, you know, he needs us all to look after him as well. Like, he needs more than one woman to look after him. The four of us have to put in some effort.
And you've been waiting for a long time to give out to me. Go on.
So I was an avid fan of the Den.
Right.
And my mom used to write in the names for the birthday roll.
Yes.
And you called out my sisters, Andrea, and you never called my name. So, I mean, to this day, my sister will still say to me, yeah, well, my name was called out in the birthday roll and yours wasn't.
Oh, I do apologise, Leona. Happy birthday for all those years we missed. Happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday.
You have 45 of them to take off, but I let you off.
Right. You're up against Nancy O'Connor from Clondalkin. How are you doing, Nancy?
I'm fine, Ray. Thanks. And yourself?
Good. You sound like you're all business.
Yeah. No. I'm going back in.
You're
I have an echo there.
You do have an echo, yes. Echo. You do. It's gone. Yeah there. We'll have to deal with it. So you're at home minding your granddaughter?
I am indeed. Ava. She's 2.5.
Right. And is she a handful or is she what sort?
No, she's a little dolt, so she is. She's a great child.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, I sometimes mind her 3-year-old brother, but I do 3 days a week as well. Or her nearly 5-year-old brother. Now, that's a different story when the two of them are together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But, look, they're great kids.
How was your weekend?
Good, thank you. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Watched the rugby, and actually was down near your place, down in Kildare on the canal, walking along the canal. From Lyons Estate.
Oh yeah, you go through there and you come out a little gateway. And you're in the canal.
Yeah,
yes,
go there
yes,
and
yes.
Have coffees and that.
Yes, that's nice. That's a nice little day out, isn't
Gorgeous,
it?
Gorgeous. Yeah.
Yeah, and the rugby. It's all about the result, but you know, it was a pretty low scoring game, but we won in the end.
Oh, we won in the end, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
That's the important thing. That's the important thing.
Absolutely, yeah.
And Josh van der Fleer, rugby player
we
of the
won
year.
The rugby player of the year, saw that, yeah.
That's pretty impressive, isn't it? For a small country, because Johnny Sexton won it a few years ago. For a small
country. Absolutely.
To have two rugby players of the year in such a short period of time. Okay, Nancy is up against Leona. Three questions each. You get 1 point if you go for a long clip. You get 2 points if you go for a short clip, because it's more difficult. And whoever has the most points is the winner. And if the drawn points, we go to a tie-break question. Okay, perfect. Here we go. Good luck to you both. Here we go. Leona, the year is 2017, 5 years ago.
2017.
Yes. Now, we're starting at the movies. Do you want to go long or short?
Short.
Short, okay. Saoirse Ronan starred in this 2017 coming-of-age drama. Can you name it? Short clip.
Oh, so now you're mad.
No, it's just you're being ridiculous because you have a great mind.
I'm sorry, I'm not perfect.
No one's asking you to be perfect.
And it is... No, I need an answer from you, Leona.
Ladybird.
Ladybird's correct. 2 points. Well done. Now, Nancy.
Yeah.
Same for you. Movies from 2017. Do you want a long clip or a short clip?
I'll go for a long clip.
Okay. This sports biopic starred Margot Robbie as a real life figure. Can you name it? Long clip.
You're hereby sentenced to 3 years probation. $100,000 fine plus $10,000 to the DA's office for special costs. Another $50,000 to set up a fund for the Special Olympics. 500 hours community service, a psychological evaluation. And your immediate resignation from the U.S. Figure Skating Association.
No, a lot of clues in there. But what's the name of the movie? No.
Gone.
I, Tonya. Yeah. So it was based on the life of Tonya Harding, who was a figure skater.
Figure skater, yeah.
Yes, yeah. Okay. Now, still early days. Leona, to you, it's music this time from 2017. Do you want a long clip or short clip?
Short.
Okay. This former boy band member enjoyed chart success with this hit in 2017. Can you name the song or the singer?
We should take this back to my place.
Niall Horan.
Wow, you're in fast there with confidence. Well done.
Oh, God.
Now, Nancy, you have to get something out of this one to stay in with a chance. So you have to go short as well. You do have to go short, yes. So music from 2017. Also a former boy band member. This performer had a hit on his hands in 2017. Can you name him or the song? Short clip.
You can't bribe the door on your way to the sky.
Who's that?
Harry Styles.
It is Harry Styles, yes. Yeah. Sign of the Times. Great song. You're on two, so you're still in with a chance.
Good.
Leona, to you now. If you get anything out of this, Nancy can't catch you. So it's news and current affairs in 2017. What do you want to do?
Sure, I might as well go along.
Go along then, okay.
Yeah.
A new craze swept across schools, which had children playing with a new propeller toy. Can you remember what that toy was? And we need an exact name. And here's your clue.
This three-prong gadget is the latest fad.
Some of them are rainbow, tie-dye.
Millions have been sold. But like with any true fad, comes a backlash. Educators say they're becoming a dizzying classroom distraction.
Because if it's a distraction, we are no longer allowing them in school. And if they do bring them to school, we will take them, hold on to them, and then give them back at the end of the day.
Right. What are they talking about?
Fidget spinners.
Fidget spinners is correct. Well done. And that's it. You got five. Hard luck, Nancy.
Not to worry. I knew the answer to that.
You knew the answer, of course you did. Tanya got you. Listen, you're not going away empty-handed. You're getting a brand new Radar to Show Keep Cup.
Oh, great.
Yes.
Look forward to that.
There's only five of them in the country so far, so you're number six.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Well done, Nancy. Good talking to you. Mind yourself.
Yes. Bye. Congratulations. Take care. Bye-bye.
Well done, Leona.
Thanks, Greg.
You're coming up to Dublin to the Hard Rock Cafe, and you can look up hardrockhotel.com to find out what's in store for you. Well done.
Okay, good talking to you. Mind yourself. After all these years, you're forgiven.
Yeah, there you go. And happy birthday again. There's another one for you. Bye. See you, Leona. Bye. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Conor Pope is here for his annual explanation of Black Friday.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, it's that time of year. I said this to my wife a couple of weeks back. I said, oh God, we won't know it now till Black Friday. And she's still mocking me about it.
She's right.
She probably is.
So have you got it down? You must have it down to 20 seconds, see the explanation.
Most of the bargains aren't really bargains. I wouldn't be bothered unless you really need the stuff. And if you do buy stuff, make sure you're careful where you buy it.
There you go. Thank you very much. Listen, there was a member of An Garda Síochána using your catchphrase this morning on Morning Ireland.
Oh, if it's too good to be true. How dare they?
Yes. You should have a C and a circle around it on that one. What is it? Give it to us now. Give it to us.
If something seems too good to be true, well, then it is too good to be true.
There you go. That's the original there. That's the original.
So I want that on playback now next Sunday or Saturday.
Yeah. You said that before and you got on playback.
Did I? Fingers crossed, Ray.
That's the measure of a success. After all the years in this program, and all he's here for is to get on playback. Right. Just one more thing on that. Because the explanation. So there's no definitive answer as to why it's called Black Friday.
No, there's a couple of different theories as to why it might be called Black Friday. One of them is that in Philadelphia in the early 1960s, hordes of people used to pour into the city to go shopping on the day after Thanksgiving, and then they'd go to the Army-Navy football game on the Saturday. So the Philadelphia police started referring to it as Black Friday because the streets were literally
black with people.
And then another theory, which is probably more plausible, is that the Friday after Thanksgiving, which is a big, big sale day in the United States, marked the moment when American retailers went from trading in the red to trading in the black, because they would trade at a loss for the first 11 months of the year, and then they'd start to make money in the 4 or 5 weeks before Christmas, so that they would be trading in the black. So that's another theory. But then there's another theory about a gold market collapse in the 19th century that gave the world the phrase Black Friday. So there's multiple different reasons for it, but I'd say the two that are more plausible are Philadelphia police and the retailers in the United States. What's definitely true is that it really has no place in this country whatsoever. Yeah. I mean, as many of your listeners will recall, it only came into being in this part of the world in 2013 when Asda, which is owned by Walmart, decided as a wheeze to have a Black Friday sale in its shops around the UK. And of course, people went mad for it, and there was blood on the aisles as people were fighting for their cheap tellies. And like a normal retailer might look at that and go, oh God, we don't want that. But no, every other retailer in Ireland and the UK the following year said, let's have our own Black Friday sale. And now that means that a lot of retailers who can probably ill afford it are pushed into having a Black Friday sale because it's what consumers expect.
Now, a few years ago, you did suggest on air about a Kindle Fire or something like that. And I went home and I did get a bargain. I was in the market for it and it was majorly reduced.
Yeah.
So have you any tips?
Do you know, we talked about air fryers last week. Yes. There's actually some good deals on those kinds of pieces of kitchen kit. And the bottom line here is, as with all sales periods, is if you want something and it's on a discount, well, then you might as well buy it over the next weekend as any other time of the year, because you're going to get it for, you know, cheaper than you might get it for if you buy it today. But a bargain is only a bargain if you actually really want or need it. Otherwise, you're just wasting your money and it doesn't matter how much it costs.
Thanks, Uncle Connor. Thank you. Right, this one came in to pricewatch@rte.ie. One of our listeners got in touch recently with a problem. I ordered a free sample of material from a company in the UK. Before it arrived, I got a bill from a delivery company for €13.64. There was an import tax of €7.64 and a disbursement fee of €5. So that comes up to 12. But anyway, I didn't pay it, thinking that the sample wouldn't be delivered then and would be sent back. The package was delivered, however, and I kept getting letters telling me to pay the charge. There was no phone number or email address for me to contact them, just a link to pay the charge. They threatened to pass me on to debt collectors, which they have now done. The bill is now €18 and they say they will add €20 on for every letter they send. This does not seem fair to me.
Yeah, it might seem very unfair, but we can blame Brexit and then maybe the material company who sent this person the free sample. But what we can't do is blame the delivery company, because there's a couple of different things at play here. So what we know is there was a free sample, but we don't know if that sample had any value. Because they might have sent what they described as a free sample that might have had a value of 10 euros or 20 euros. We don't know that. So that's a piece of information that's missing.
Is there not a label where you tell
And this is the other thing. We don't know if the retailer in the UK had labelled the parcel correctly and filled in the right paperwork, making it clear that that it was a sample for promotional purposes only and that it had a negligible value. Because if the retailer in the UK had done that, and if they'd filled in the correct paperwork, and if they'd said, this is a promotional sample, it has virtually no value, well then our listener wouldn't have been liable to pay any tax. But if the forms weren't filled in correctly in the UK, well then when they come into this country, because of Brexit, the delivery companies have no choice but to impose VAT and sometimes excess duty onto a product. So if the retailer in the UK had just sent it with no information or ascribed a particular value to the sample, then it's going to be taxed accordingly when coming into the UK. Because what happens is the postal service on Post or the courier company DPD or Fastway or whoever it might be delivering the package then complete all the relevant documentation for customs, including where the product came from, and then the person, our listener in this case, gets a bill from the courier or the postal company before the package is delivered. And then there's an administration charge, which I think she refers to as a disbursement fee.
Yeah.
So there'll be an administration charge. Now, I can understand why this listener might have assumed that by ignoring the request for the payment, that the product might have been sent back. And in times past, that might have been what happened. I mean, you might have had the postman coming to your door saying, well, there's a charge on this, and if you don't give me the charge, well, then you're not getting your package.
Yeah.
But that's not what happens anymore. And nor is it the responsibility of the delivery company to send the product back to the original retailer, because that just adds more work to them. And effectively, then they're working twice. They're doing the admin to get the parcel to me, and then they're doing the admin to get the parcel back to the retailer, and they're getting no payment for it whatsoever. So you can understand why the delivery companies don't do that. But it's all really down to Brexit, because in pre-Brexit times, there would have been no duty, no taxes, no implications whatsoever for our listeners.
But you have the thing that you ordered in your possession.
And
so there's no incentive whatsoever for you to pay the charge.
Except that what all of the delivery companies do is they're fairly well versed in how to get the money from you now. So they will start sending debt collectors letters, and they will keep at it, because the money is, you're legally obligated to pay that money. Now,
Have they paid the import tax?
No, the delivery company.
Yeah.
They may or may not have. It depends on the relationship they have with the retailer. I suspect not.
Right.
So I suspect that the person is liable for it. So what could have happened? What would have been the alternative thing? The original company, who our listener didn't identify, might have labelled the package differently for starters. We've said that. Or maybe they could have had the information on their website, which would have explained all of these things. And then our listener could have made a more informed decision that the sample was free, but you're going to be hit with charges. But the other thing that she could have done was she could have paid the charge as it fell due for the delivery company, then sent the sample back. And when you do that, then you can claim all of the charges back from, you can claim all the taxes back. But I can see your eyes are going up to heaven, as indeed mine would, because that's just a pain. No, nobody wants to do that.
Yeah.
Like, that just adds a whole layer of complexity that's unnecessary. But in essence, the only way she could have, she could have got the money back would have been to pay it, then send the product back, and then claim the refund, because you can't pay tax on a product that you no longer have. So that's the only way she could have avoided it. But given that she has kept the product, and like the product has a negligible value.
Well, she, I would imagine, I don't know what sort of material it is. It's either covering for a sofa or something, or it's something she wants to make a dress out of, or it could be curtains or whatever. Something like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
And completely understandable that you can't see it on a picture, really. So she wanted to feel it in her hand and see the actual colour.
100%. And that's why, I can honestly, and we're kind of working slightly in an information vacuum, but the reason why I wanted to include this is because, although this is a very specific story about a piece of material being sent, and like people will be going, oh, that doesn't really matter. I mean, like, this is going to apply to a lot more people in the next few weeks in different circumstances.
Yes, over the Christmas.
Because people are going to buy products from UK-based websites, and they're still going to be unfamiliar with the changed rules that mandate that now anything that you buy in the UK is liable for tax. Now, some retailers in the UK, like the big retailers, and you could name them, the big retailers who are accustomed to doing business with lots and lots of people in the Republic of Ireland, will have a system in place whereby
on their website
the product, the price that you pay on, you know, whatever, ASOS or H&M or wherever, well, whatever it might be, the price you pay includes the taxes. So there's no implications there. But smaller businesses, and I would imagine that this business that's sending out a small little sample of material, it's probably a small little business, mightn't be overly familiar with how...
Can I just ask a question as well?
Yeah.
Would that be a way of getting around paying that charge by labelling it as a free sample?
If it had been labelled as a free sample, well, then she wouldn't have been obliged to pay any tax on it. And if there was no tax accruing... Well, then there would have been no admin charge for the delivery
company.
Well, what
I'm saying is people could cheat as well. They could have something of value and just label it free sample.
They could, but then you're trying to cheat the tax man.
Yeah, I know.
And you're trying to cheat customs. And if you're a reputable retailer...
You're not going to do that.
Or indeed, if you're a reputable shopper, you know, it's not worth the hassle.
But that system can't last forever. The fact that you get the package and then you are asked to pay the charge after the fact then.
Except it has existed for quite some time for countries, so-called third countries. Right. And by third countries, that's not Ireland and not countries within the European Union. So if you bought something directly from Dan's dodgy deals in Denver and he shipped them over to you.
Yeah, but I was always getting a text to say that they have DPD, have Dan's package.
And they're not going to
unless I pay the thing.
There's different ways and different approaches to it. I think one of the things that's happened recently is because the UK is now one of these so-called third countries, the volume of... Packages coming from the UK to Ireland is much higher than the volume of packages
from the Far East
or America, wherever it might be. So the companies are just saying, well, they're not in the business of storing hundreds of packages and then shipping them back.
Okay. John has been on. You can use this. He says, a bargain is something you neither need nor want at a price you can't resist. Conor Pope, thank you very much.
Thanks
Take
a lot.
That away, which is free of charge. It's a bargain. Cormac, no, it's Sarah. Sarah on the way on her own on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.